One of the best things to do from a professional development perspective, in my opinion, as a fit pro, is actually go and observe other fit pros. Every single one of us has some level of magic in what we do. And you being able to step back and, of course, enjoy the class and get the workout out of it, but actually be a student in the moment and say, if I could take away one thing from this 30 minutes, this 45 minutes, this hour long experience that I've had, what would I do differently tomorrow? I actually really enjoy going to other Solid Core coaches classes, going to Soul Cycle classes, going to Barry's classes, trying a new workout in a city that I'm traveling to or a new country that I'm traveling to. Why? Not because it's just fun and a great way to mix it up. Yeah, it is that, but also because I can be a student and actually observe how someone else gets done whatever it is that they're really, really good at. But I try to take those learnings with me into the next time that I'm teaching a Solid Core class.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Creating the 4% Podcast, real life stories from Fit Pros. I'm your host, Maria Costello. Stories of motivation, discipline, failure, and success from your favorite fitness instructors, a podcast about how to create an impactful and meaningful class, which amounts to 4% of a person's day. Made with sweat, for Fit Pros, by Fit Pros. Thanks for listening, and let's get this episode started. All right. Welcome back, everybody. He is a Virginia native from a military family who used to buy candy in bulk to resell it for a profit. Brian Myers always had an undeniable talent for all things entrepreneurial and helping businesses scale and grow. He is linear, organized, highly analytical, and his career grew from consulting work at the prestigious Boston Consulting Group to becoming VP of Development at Sweetgreen before people even knew what Sweetgreen was. Brian never misses breakfast or an opportunity to be active. A regular at various boutique fitness brands, he became enamored with his Sweatlana under the blue lights of Solid Core. Solid Core is a Pilates-inspired strength training workout, and since opening its first studio in Washington, D.C. in 2013, has become one of the fastest-growing companies in the fitness sector. With more than 100 locations across 24 states and hundreds of thousands of clients, including Michelle Obama. Currently, as president, CEO, and Solid Core coach, Brian Myers is revising the white, thin, cisgender fitness narrative and making history as one of the nation's few Black LGBTQ plus CEOs. He recently addressed his mostly white male board of directors at a board meeting and told them Solid Core is that girl. Honey, it really is. He is CEO. He is a husband, a father to 1.5-year-old Vincent, and Loki Ratchet. It is quite an honor, and I'm fangirling so hard. Welcome, Brian Myers, to Creating the 4% Podcast. Brian, welcome.
Wow, Maria, that was quite the intro. The journey you took us on from selling candy to being Loki Ratchet, it truly is me. So thank you so much for that super kind intro and super delighted to be here with you for today's conversation.
Thank you so much for taking the time. And as I was saying to you before we started recording, I am a big, big fan of you. I've been following your career and listened to you on so many different outlets. And I'm just so excited to have somebody of your stature here. So thank you for saying yes. There are so many CEOs who leave me on scene, but you responded. Thank you for responding and thank you for being so generous. I know we connected a while ago and it took some time to coordinate. That's on me, but I just want to say thank you. And I want everyone to get to know you. So I'm going to pass it over to you and I want you to share with everyone listening how your fitness journey began.
Absolutely. So I really am debating how far back I go with this, but I think I'll go back to truly my childhood. As you mentioned, I was a military brat, so we moved all over when I was a kid. But one thing was really consistent is I was always very physically active. I really enjoyed moving my body. I would spend hours and hours playing outside as a kid, playing tag. I had the nickname of Battle Wounds when I was a little kid by my family, because I was always doing something that ended up leaving me with some sort of battle wound. So I was pogo sticking, jumping rope. I was skateboarding, rollerblading, etc. And when I got to middle school, Maria, I was really thinking about how I took that sort of physical activity that I had as an elementary schooler and turned it into something. And what I tried to do with that was I tried to play football. And what became very, very clear very early on is that organized sports probably is not for Brian Myers. At least not for Brian Myers Jr. My dad claims he was good at both football and basketball back in his day, but who knows? But for Brian Myers Jr., organized sports was not for me. And so transparently, I really struggled to figure out what my outlet was going to be from middle school through high school and beyond. And I always joke with people that I spent every single football game on the football field in high school and in college, but I wasn't playing football. I was in the marching band. And so that became my outlet of physical activity. It's, you know, for people who weren't in marching band, it is actually unbelievably physical. And then post-college, I was like, okay, what am I going to do to stay physically active? I guess I got to actually figure out how to work out. And so I moved to Washington, D.C. As you mentioned, I was working in consulting. And so I started running outside, but then I realized I need to do something beyond just cardio. I was super intimidated by the gym because I had never really spent time in a gym. So I started to try to go to the gym, but again, was lost and confused. Ended up working out with a personal trainer to try to get over a little bit of that gym intimidation, so to speak, but never honestly felt at home because, again, I wasn't an athlete in the traditional sense. I was, you know, a gay man who, you know, oftentimes doesn't feel at home in a gym stereotypically. And then I walked into 9.5 years ago, a Solid Core studio. And I had been invited by a friend of mine from college. And he was like, you have to try this workout. It is unbelievable. And it's going to change your life. And it was one of those things where I always firmly believe in like supporting my friends, whatever they do. And he was becoming a Solid Core coach. So I was like, fine, I'll go to this workout. And I went to the workout, and as he mentioned, it really changed my life. You know, after my first workout, I was like, I have no idea what my body just went through. And it took me a little bit of time to kind of get my sea legs. But once I got my sea legs within the workout, I was hooked. And I've been a client ever since. And then it just so happened a few years later, after I took my first Solid Core class, that my sort of passion for this workout and my professional career happened to intersect. And I've been a member of this leadership team at Solid Core now for the past 6 years. And I've been the CEO for the past about 3 years. But that's kind of like where my fitness journey began and where it's brought me to today.
Amazing. I think that's just so remarkable that, as you said, your professional career and your passion merged together. That's not something that you hear every day. And you're pretty young. It happened to you at a very young age, which is just remarkable. And I think that's something people aspire to. That's what I think is one of the most wonderful things about your fitness journey, that you got that chance for your paths to intersect, and what you've done with it has been pretty amazing. I'm going to go back to the Boston Consulting Group aspect of your life was next step from what your degree was at the University of Virginia. Is that right?
That's right. Exactly. I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I was like, consulting is a great way to experience a lot of different things. And so like, maybe I'll figure it out.
And what do you think was one of the biggest takeaways that you learned at Boston Consulting Group as you went into Sweetgreen? And what was that transition like?
I always tell people the biggest thing that I learned during my time at BCG that I applied going into Sweetgreen, and I apply today in my role, but I will also say I apply it in my personal life as well, is how to take a big, hairy, complex problem and break it down into its component parts so that it becomes less of a big, hairy, scary thing and something that's actually solvable. I always tell people most things in the world are not rocket science. except rocket science. And so when you think about most problems that you face, again, whether they be personally or professionally, most of them, you have the tools and resources to be able to solve. It's just a matter of figuring out, okay, this big thing that feels nebulous, that feels complex, that feels really hard. Okay, that big thing is actually made up of a bunch of different small things. And if I can actually move the needle on each of those small things, then the big thing will move. And that is what they teach you in consulting, because you're helping clients tackle some of their hardest, most strategic problems. And the only way to be able to do that is by breaking it down to its component parts. And so that skill and experience allowed me to walk into Sweetgreen, which was a company that I knew as a consumer, but I knew nothing about the restaurant industry. I frankly didn't really know a whole lot about retail. The vast majority of my work at BCG, very oddly, ended up being in the aerospace industry. So I knew a lot about satellites, and I knew a lot about missiles, and I knew a lot about unmanned aerial vehicles and jet engines. But I didn't know a lot about salads, and I didn't know a lot about restaurants, and I didn't know a lot about retail. But again, that skill of being able to say, okay, this is a big problem that you probably don't know a lot about, but how can you break it down to smaller problems that you can get through one by one? And then when you get to the end, you're like, oh, wait, I kind of get this now. And now I know what to do.
So what was the problem at Sweetgreen that you made that transition? What were you hired to do? Did you move up through the company? What did that journey look like?
I was hired originally to oversee our financial planning and analysis function. So it was really the function that was designed to give our leadership team visibility into the business, how we were performing, where we were performing, when we were performing, which locations, which people, et cetera, so that we could then make decisions. That role evolved into a broader strategy role. And that strategy role tackled all sorts of questions that we went through during my tenure at Sweetgreen. Questions like, you know, how committed are we to local sourcing and scratch cooking in our restaurants? Questions like, how much of our budget should we spend on creating an amazing brand versus driving traffic to our restaurants? Questions like our investment in technology and how much should we continue to spend there? How differentiated does it need to be? Everything in between. And so it's a hard question. It's a great question, but it's a hard question to answer in a bite size, because frankly, that skill set that I just described, we use across all of those different things that I just talked about. As we thought about, okay, how do we really want to build this company? How do we build an enduring brand that is really going to transform? You know, that was our intent, really, to transform the food industry. And then I'll end by saying that strategy role gave me enough exposure to kind of the nuts and bolts of running the business that I then went to my leader at the time and said, I actually want to get closer to the action. I want to get closer to a role that feels like I'm really building something in a very tangible way. And ultimately, where that landed was my final role at Sweetgreen was overseeing all of our new restaurant expansion. And so I oversaw our real estate, our store design, our store construction, and ultimately the facilities management of those restaurants on the back end. And I did that for about 18 months before I left the company to join the leadership team here at Solidcore.
I asked that because, although it was a very compound question, as you said, that it's very difficult to answer in a bite-sized answer or a couple of sentences, because I think that there's a lot of similarities in the fitness industry in general and running and scaling one fitness studio for an owner that doesn't necessarily have the experience that you got at the Boston Consulting Group. I have started consulting on a very minor level, and it's very funny. I've heard you say before, and I echo that, explaining that to people sounds very like consulting, air quotes. What is consulting? But I love that you break it down as someone has a problem, they come to you with that problem, or they want some kind of end result, and either you work backwards to sort of be able to standardize getting that end result or making it more feasible, whether it's logistics-wise or cost-wise, right? So there's so many different ways the problem can present itself and how to solve it. That's a skill I personally learned in corporate America, just being a nobody. Because I was just working with, people at higher levels asking for things. And sometimes I wanted to say, do you even know what you're asking for? Or are you just saying words?
Yep.
Right? Because they sometimes didn't fundamentally understand what actually went into what they were asking because they weren't doing the job at the ground level. So I think the fact that you had that experience really set you up at Sweetgreen to scale them and grow them in the way that you did while there, along with the rest of your team, right? Because it's not a one-man job. So I guess my question for you as it pertains to this is, we have a lot of Fit Pros listening who have either newly become studio owners as well, or dream of becoming a studio owner. What are some of takeaways that you can summarize here for them that they can do in place of being able to work for a large consulting firm and sort of practicing for someone else before they can enact those same skills for their own studios?
Yeah. It's a great, great question. And, you know, I will start by saying my number one piece of advice for people is remember the phrase that I said before and either write it down or come up with your own version of it. But remember that most things are not rocket science, with the exception of rocket science. And anytime I come across something that's really, really hard, I actually remind myself of that because oftentimes we're all kind of plagued with imposter syndrome of being like, oh my gosh, I'm not smart enough to figure this out, or I'm not capable enough, or I don't have the experience, or I didn't work at XYZ company. And like, I'm like a random boy born in North Carolina, parents didn't go to college. Like, I'm nobody special, right? And so I have to constantly remind myself that like most things in the world are not rocket science, except rocket science. And so if you start by that sort of principle and give yourself the foundation of confidence that you actually are capable, you actually are smart enough, you actually are resourceful enough to figure it out. That's like the first barrier, right? Like, knock the imposter syndrome away by reminding yourself of that. The second piece is actually going through this process of saying, okay, if what I want to do is I'm going to make up a problem, like what are opportunity? What I want to do is figure out how I turn my single studio into a 10 unit chain. If you got to like ask yourself that problem at the 30,000 foot level, it's like, oh my God, what are all the things I have to do? I have to like find and build a team. I have to find a bunch of real estate. I have to find investors or figure out a loan. I have to, you know, operationally hire all these people. Like, there's a million different things and can quickly become overwhelming. But if you, like you said, Marie, if you start to work backwards and say, okay, if this is what I need to do, what do I need to do before that in order to get there? And then what do I need to do before that in order to get to that step? What do I need to do before that to get to that next step? And like, it may be 100 steps, it may be 1,000 steps, but if you start to work backwards, you'll realize that you're actually not that far away from your next step. And so that's the thing that I think a lot of people will get stuck and paralyzed because of, is that like they see the thing 1,000 steps away and like, I can't do that, I can't get there. But if you actually just think about, okay, what's the very next thing that you need to do? Knowing that the other principle that I like to say is like, most decisions that you make in life are reversible. And so make the next step, because even if that next step is not the exact perfect next step, know that you can reverse it or pivot or change from there for the vast majority of the decisions that you make in life. So that's kind of like my second piece of advice. And then my third piece of advice is always ask yourself, what is the thing that if I don't think about it, could totally disrupt my plan? And I call this the force yourself to tell yourself why your baby is ugly, right? Like, oftentimes we look to outsiders to critique us. We look to outsiders to tell us why, sort of to illuminate our blind spots. And those are great things to do, right? Like, build yourself a network around you, leverage people who are smarter than you, who have been there before, but also do that work yourself. Because a lot of times we can actually start to predict what those pitfalls are going to be, where they might be, when they might be, and then mitigate them ourselves so that when we bring someone else in for that outsider perspective, they're actually telling you things that truly you don't know, or that truly you would not have seen if someone else didn't point them out to you. And I think a lot of times we like get to 80% of the answer and we're like, okay, great. Now people help me, like come in and tell me this, tell me that, tell me this, tell me that. And it's like, no, no, no. If you can actually get to 98% of the answer, then that last 2% becomes really, really valuable. It's truly the things that you would not have known had you not done the work yourself. So those would be like my three things that I would throw out there in case it's beneficial to anyone who happens to be listening.
I think it's going to be more than just beneficial. I think that's so introspective. It's hard to be that real with yourself and find the ugly that you said yourself instead of waiting for someone to warn you about it, because it takes time for you to really sit there and think about, okay, what could go wrong? What can disrupt my vision and how could I counter that? It's not only time consuming, but I think it's scary for a lot of fitness professionals, imposter syndrome, and all the other things that you mentioned.
And what I would also add to that, Maria, is like, it is all of the things that you just said, and it is one of the most valuable things that you will do, not only for yourself, but to the extent that you are seeking an investor, whether that's like an institutional investor or even just a friend, or you're going out and seeking a loan, because again, those people on the outside are going to ask you those questions. And the better that you can identify to them that you've thought about those things and here's your plan to mitigate them, the more confidence it actually gives them to back you. And so I think about my time at Sweetgreen, and one of the things that we did there was exactly this exercise. We always spent time thinking about what are the roadblocks, what are the pitfalls, what are the things that we may not be thinking of. And anytime that we raise money, we raised hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of my 4 years that I was there. One of the most consistent pieces of feedback that we heard from investors is, wow, you all as a leadership team have a lot of self-awareness. And that gives us confidence as investors to know that you all know the things that you need to be thoughtful around, the things that you need to look out for. And again, if you are thinking about that, any level of outside support, I think that's really beneficial.
All right. So you're at Sweetgreen. Everything's going amazing. The company is growing. You're thriving. And all of a sudden, the opportunity to go and join the Solid Core team comes about. How does that happen? What's the timeline look like? And what kinds of things did you consider? Was it something where you were like, I'm ready, it's time for the next step? Or was it a hard decision because maybe you were still in the trenches of what you wanted to accomplish at Sweetgreen?
It was a very, very challenging decision, but I'll rewind and kind of address your question of how it came up first. So I was chugging along at Sweetgreen. We were growing. I was, like I said, kind of 12 to 18 months into a new function, overseeing all of our new restaurant growth, which was a really, really exciting role. And I got some outreach from a former colleague of mine who I had met when I was at the Boston Consulting Group. And this colleague of mine had began working with the founder of Solid Core, helping her on the HR side. And she was like, oh, I know you take this work out Solid Core. I'm now working with Anne, the founder. You should meet her and, you know, just get to know each other because you love the workout. And you're obviously working at a company that is growing very rapidly. So I ended up connecting with Anne, which was great. Being the reformed consultant, I came into that conversation with couple of pages of my perspective on the business and kind of what she should be thinking about as she's thinking about growth. And I will make a long story short, she ultimately asked if I would ever consider joining her the journey of building Solid Core. And transparently, at first, I was really apprehensive. As you mentioned, I was in the trenches. I had a good thing going. I had been at Sweetgreen for, at that point, almost 4 years. I felt like I really knew that company and that team and that product. And it was scary to jump off of a train that, you know, started to feel like home to do something else. However, one of the things that I've tried to do in my career, and I try to encourage other people to do, is to do things that feel scary and to take calculated risks when you're really going to be betting on yourself and your ability to execute. And that's ultimately what this was. It was an opportunity that felt scary, and it was an opportunity to really bet on myself and say, Brian, are you capable of stepping up into a more senior level of leadership? Because what I was going to be taking on was the role of chief operating officer. And so instead of now, you know, where I was at Sweetgreen, just overseeing a function, I all of a sudden was going to have broad leadership over the vast majority of the business. And that was scary, but I felt confident enough to bet on myself and say, I think I've done great work at Sweetgreen, and I think I've been exposed to enough at Sweetgreen, especially in my role leading strategy, where I was, as I talked about, kind of putting my hands in a bunch of different pots around the business. Do I feel like I can come in and lead those functions holistically? And I said, yeah, I'm going to bet on myself. And, you know, maybe I'll fall on my face, but that's what learning's about. Or maybe it'll be really successful. And thankfully, I've definitely fallen on my face a couple of times, but generally speaking, it's been a successful 6 years working alongside Anne as her number two as COO, and then ultimately about 3 years ago, you know, being chosen as her successor as she decided to exit day-to-day leadership of the business.
Tell me about the idea and your thought process behind, okay, I'm COO, I'm coming into this company, I'm going to scale it, I'm going to grow it. You've done the strategy plan with Anne, and then you're like, I'm going to get certified. And then you failed your first eval.
I did mention there were a few times where I fell on my face. That would be one of them. Yeah, so I really, truly believe, and it's actually something that we did at Sweetgreen too, and I believed in it so strongly that I brought that culture to SolidCore, which is, I don't think anyone should work at a company that has a product that is as experiential as a SolidCore product who doesn't get a taste of what delivering that product feels like. And I fundamentally believe that I could not be a successful incredible COO of this business without going through the coach training process. Because no matter what size this business is, whether this business is 25-ish studios like it was when I joined, or it's 110 plus studios as it is today, the vast majority of our team members will always be coaches. Always. And so how can I lead a team without really knowing what it feels like to do the job that the vast majority of the people who work for this company do? And so when I went through coach training for the first time, I thought I would actually just do it for the experience and the knowledge and the perspective, not because I was actually going to coach. Obviously, that has evolved and I now do coach, as you mentioned. But that was really the spirit behind why I went through it. I didn't know if I would be good at it because I never really coached fitness before. And I, as you mentioned, went through the process. And the way that coach training at SolidCore works is that there's kind of a sort of classroom portion that lasts for a few weeks. And then there's a practicum portion that lasts for a couple of weeks where you actually coach real clients in active classes. And you go through a couple of evaluations during that period. And yeah, Maria, I did not do so well on my first evaluation. I ended up doing 5 exercises on like the left side of the body and only 1 on the right side of the body. And they were like, yeah, I recognize that you are the COO here, but we cannot allow you to pass your first evaluation with that level of imbalance. So definitely one of those moments that I fell on my face and ate a bit of humble pie, but that's part of the process. You know, that coaches go through that. You're in the heat of the moment and you forget which side of the body you did a certain exercise on, and you could end up in that situation. And so honestly, I'm really grateful for the experience to know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And 2, I'm also really grateful that we have a team that, regardless of title, regardless of where you sit on the organizational chart, is not afraid to be really honest with you about your opportunities, not because they want you to feel bad, but because they believe in the sort of efficacy of our product so much that they weren't going to let me pass an eval just because I was a COO. They were going to make sure that if I was going to pass an eval and become a trained SolidCore coach and have that title, that I did it the right way and that I did it with all of the same evaluation criteria that every other coach goes through. And so for that, I am forever, forever grateful.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that you require some sort of training around this for anyone who works at HQ. It may not, whether they coach or not related, but it's to do all the things that you just said that it did for you. It seems like a no-brainer, but yet a lot of fitness brands don't look at it that way. Why? What's the disconnect there?
So you are absolutely right. Everyone who gets a job at HQ is required to go through an abbreviated version of our coach training. It's a multi-day process. They learn in the exact same way that our actual coaches go through training, and they are required to do a mic session where they are put on the mic and they lead a short version of a solid core class. And like I said, I think that is so important because it is easy for us to sit in a room in a meeting and say, our business would be better if our coaches did X, or we would have stronger financials if our coaches did Y. Because again, the coaches are the vast majority of the employees. And so the easiest way to impact the business is usually through our coaches. However, when you put on that mic and you recognize all of the things that go into producing an amazing, well-run, well-executed, energetic class, all of a sudden it becomes clearer why we can't just continue to add things to our coaches' plates, why they're trying to do XYZ things but in the 10 minutes between classes, and why they may not be able to do this thing that you think would be so great if they just did. And that perspective to me is so critical for us to make better decisions at HQ that truly support our teams as opposed to overwhelm our teams. And to your latter question as to why others don't do it, I would really just be speculating, but I think where I would land on that in speculation is it's easier to not. At the end of the day, it's easier to not make people go through an experience that makes them uncomfortable, because let me be clear, a lot of people who come and work at HQ in various roles would never be a fitness instructor. And so like it puts them in a very uncomfortable position where they're having to step out of their comfort zone. They're having to sort of perform, do public speaking. And that's not for most people. And that's why we do it in small intimate groups and make sure that people feel supported through it. But it's easier to tell people, oh no, you don't need to worry about that. That's thing number one. And then thing number two is, as I was mentioning, it's easy to sit in rooms and make decisions and pretend like other people are the problem, when really the problem is actually a lack of perspective and a lack of a deep understanding of what it means to actually do the job, not the person on the other end not appreciating or not wanting to or not valuing whatever it is that HQ may be thinking is important. And yeah, I really wish more people and brands would do it, because I think there's a lot of value in it. But again, that's just me speculating.
I mean, I think anyone listening, FitPro or not, would agree and probably be saying in the car, like, reach, right? Like you said, something so minuscule, like changing the job description or the job duties of a FitPro, a coach, an instructor, doing something, those precious 10 minutes right before a class, only somebody who's taught or who's actively teaching would even think about that small detail that really isn't that small and can make or break the entire experience. You said it beautifully, and you're right. It's absolutely critical. And I think that's one of the things that makes Solid Core stand out, in my opinion, not just as a brand, but I know a lot of Solid Core coaches throughout the country and they fucking love working there. And that's like amazing to hear, especially nowadays. A lot of us, me included, and I hope for anyone listening that I'm not overgeneralizing, but a lot of us have found ourselves wondering if we still love what we're doing. Should we still stay with this company and this modality? COVID changed so much for a lot of us, but Solid Core coaches, in my opinion, the ones that I know personally, honed in on the fact that they belong there and they want to be there forever.
Yeah.
And that's a testament. Yeah, a testament to you.
Yeah, and I love to hear that. That's amazing. And I'm so glad. And I will also just give a massive shout out to our founder who founded this company as the original coach. And so she set an amazing kind of roadmap as of someone who existed in a senior leadership role, who despite founding this company 10 years ago, still to this day, even though she is no longer an employee here, she has sold her equity and all this stuff, she still says on occasion, I'd love to get on the mic and coach. Like that idea that a leader and a founder can be so connected to the organization and its purpose and its product that 10 years later, regardless of how much money they've made, regardless of what they're often doing, can still be connected to the product is again, laid an amazing foundation for me as a leader. Amazing other CEOs who are out there who are doing it too, right? Like I look at Joey, the CEO of Barry's, and I'm always inspired by him. So, you know, it's not just me. There are incredible leaders out there who are doing it as well. And I think their businesses or our businesses are all better because of it.
I would agree. I think that's amazing. Okay. So you're COO, loving life. Everything's going great. You have plans, I think, to sell the company or something is happening. Something big is about to go down at Solid Core, and it's March 2020. Take it from there.
PTSD, but I will pick it up the best I can. Yeah. Funny story. So I was COO. Our founder was actually on vacation. She calls me from a vacation with friends. She was in the British Virgin Islands. I will remember this phone call like it was yesterday for probably the rest of my life. And she calls me and she's like, "Have you been watching the news?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I watch the news every day." "Why?" And she's like, "This like coronavirus thing is like, I don't know. Like, I think this is going to be a big thing." And for those of you who have worked with founders or those of you who are founders, you know that sometimes founders can like latch on to things and you're kind of like, "Oh, like this is not actually going to be a thing, but like I have to do this work because they're asking me to and I work for them." And so that's kind of what it was. It was like, she called me and she was like, "I think we need to build a plan around coronavirus." And I was like, I kind of rolled my eyes and I was like, "But of course I'm going to do it. Like, this is my job, but we'll build a plan around coronavirus." And our like big plan that we built was, what would happen if our business declined by 25%? And then like the most unrealistic case we thought was, what would happen if our business declined by 50%? And then a week later, we shut every single studio and our business overnight declined by 100%. It was one of the most surreal experiences that I hope I ever experience, because I never want to go through that again. But I think the thing that it taught me is probably twofold. One is a broad life lesson, which is that life is incredibly unpredictable. And you can have all of the most amazing plans in the world, and you just never know. And so you always have to be ready to pivot and respond, is kind of lesson number one. Lesson number two goes back to the thing that I talked about at the top of this podcast, which is, most things in life are not rocket science, except rocket science. And so when shit got hard, which it inevitably did, it was a reinforcement that you were smart enough, you were capable enough, you were tenacious enough, and you will figure it out. We had no idea. Every day we woke up, there was new news. We're going to reopen. We're not going to reopen. We'll never reopen. Indoor fitness is dead. There will be vaccines. There will be no vaccines. Vaccines work. Vaccines don't work. Every single day there was something. And it felt like a tidal wave, just a never-ending tidal wave of change. But at every turn, our team figured it out. And that is probably the biggest lesson that I took away from the pandemic. And I think about that to this day. Every time something happens in our business and I'm like, I have no idea how we're going to confront this challenge, I think back and go, we did that every day for basically 2 years straight. We didn't know how we were going to confront the problem that we woke up with that day. And by the time we went to sleep, we had figured it out. And yeah, I will always be thankful to the pandemic for that, though I'm not thankful for the pandemic, but I will always be thankful to the pandemic for that lesson, because it really has given me a leadership confidence that I don't think I necessarily had going into it.
One of the things that I read about Solid Core specifically is, you were swift, you were quick. And yeah, sure, Anne told you to look into it because she had a feeling this was going to be a thing, but that's only a week's worth of time. Like, that's still a lot of foresight to have quickly. I think some owners, large corporations, even outside of fitness, they just kind of waited, they hesitated. But I'm wondering if you can speak to that instinct outside of imposter syndrome and experience and all of that. What are some things that you consider quick bullet points when you have to make fast decisions in the name of the business, right? Like, yes, you laid off staff and cut overhead. Sure. Big bullet points. But if a situation like that arises where the business itself is in jeopardy, maybe you don't have the members, maybe the overhead continues to increase, but traffic is decreasing. It doesn't have to be at a pandemic level. But what are some things that really made you and your team react quickly?
Yeah. So one, I will be the first to say, I wish I could claim that I was the smartest person in the room and pushed us to cut as deep and as fast as we did. However, what I will say, one, I was not that person. But what I will say is it goes back to what I described earlier, which is if you do the 98% job and ask yourself the questions, then you can bring people around you who help give you over to that 100% mark. And that's what we did. We built a really robust plan to sort of shore up the economics of the business, provide ourselves with runway. And then we surrounded ourselves with our outside advisors, our board, and they really pushed us and said, are you cutting fast enough and are you cutting deep enough? And what we ultimately asked ourselves was, and this is something that, you know, Dr. Fauci said in the broader landscape of the pandemic, but it's a lesson that I learned on that call with our board and a lesson that I try to take with me, which is what would be the cost? People often worry about overreacting. And I think one of the questions that I would ask yourself in those kinds of situations is what would be the cost of underreacting? And in that situation, the cost would have been losing the business. And so that would tell you that you are better off overreacting than underreacting. And that is like the number one tip that I would tell someone who's confronting an acute business challenge, hopefully not the size and scale of the pandemic, but the question that you have to ask yourself is what would be the cost of underreacting? And based on your answer to that question, that should guide how you react. Because as Dr. Fauci said, if we overreact in the pandemic, no one's going to know because they're going to be like, well, I told you it wasn't a big deal. You guys overreacted. But if we underreact, how many people are going to die? And so therefore, in his world, and I'm not trying to get political, but in his world, he's like, I would rather overreact because the consequence of underreacting is death. And in the same way, that's the way we thought about our business. The consequence of underreacting is not having a business, not having a business to impact and change people's lives through the product that Anne founded and created, not having employment for hundreds of people who are counting on us to feed their families, to pay for their mortgages, to pay their student. Like, that was the consequence. And so therefore, it guided everything that we did in those weeks to come, which for a lot of people looked like extreme overreacting. But in the end, ended up being one of the smartest financial outcomes that we could have made.
Wow. Brilliant. I've heard you say a lot of things, but I've never heard you say that. And the way that you punctuated that was amazing. My head is exploding because I have 1,000 questions I still want to ask you, and I'm keeping an eye on the clock. So I think that's going to help a lot of people, even beyond just being a business owner. I think that in general, it's so true. We're so afraid of overreacting. And when big things are at stake, it's better to overreact than underreact. Very well said. Okay, Brian, let's talk some FitPro talk here. What do you think about FitPro burnout? Do you see it at Solid Core? And what do you think are some early signs that manifest themselves as burnout? What can FitPros do to manage it? Do you think it's avoidable? Is it just a rite of passage? There's a lot of talk around burnout. I know that you're not teaching 40 classes a week, right?
Yep.
Burnout is real, whether you're a FitPro or not in any job. So I'd love to hear your take on that. That was a very compound question, but run with it.
Yeah, I'll run with it as best as I can. So I will start by saying for anyone who's listening who is not a Fit Pro, I will just back up and say, do not underestimate what it takes to deliver the experience that you have when you go into a fitness class or you go and have a fitness experience. I think it's one of the learnings that I had going through coach training at Solid Core was just the exhaustion. Like, you are giving so much of yourself. You are so focused during the 50 minutes or 45 minutes or 30 minutes, however long the experience is. You are thinking of everyone else except for yourself during that time window for some modalities, you are actually doing the workout. There's a lot that goes into being a fit pro. And so I am not surprised that burnout is a large topic of conversation. However, and when I think about burnout, the way that I define burnout, perhaps controversial, but the way that I define burnout, both professionally, you know, if you have an office job, but also if you're a fit pro, it's the continuous and intentional erosion of boundaries that you have set. The continuous, intentional erosion of boundaries that you have set. So the first question that I ask someone when they come to me and they talk to me about burnout in any context is, what are the boundaries that you have set? Usually, they have some boundaries. Then my second question is, how and when have you communicated those boundaries? That's usually the question that breaks people. Because usually they have some concept of boundaries in their head. You know, I feel like I'm coaching too much. You know, I don't want to coach more than X number of classes a week, or I don't want to sub, you know, more than X number of times a month, et cetera. Then I say, okay, great. Or if it's an office job, you know, when I get home, I want to make sure I protect the hours of 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. to spend with my family and my kids, whatever happens to be. So the next thing is, when and how have they communicated those boundaries, right? So like, you set boundaries, a lot of times we set them in our head. And then it's like, when and how have you communicated those boundaries? And usually for most people, that is where the problem lies, is they haven't communicated those boundaries. And whether that be around time off, whether that be around number of classes they're coaching, whether that be around, you know, communication channel, I feel like someone's always texting or calling me, I only want them to email me, what have you. And then the last question that I always ask, which is actually the most critical one in some ways, is, if the person who's intentionally eroding those boundaries knew that they were intentionally eroding those boundaries, would they keep doing it? And I will tell you, Maria, in 99% of the conversations that I've ever had, the answer is no. The answer is yes. I say, find another job. Because someone who's willing to intentionally erode the boundaries that you've clearly set and communicated on a continuous basis has no respect for you. And therefore, you shouldn't work with them. But the vast majority of the time, the people are like, no, actually, Maria is an amazing person. And I bet if she knew that I didn't want her to call me to sub every Saturday because that's the day that I spend with my kids, she probably wouldn't do it. I'm like, yeah, because most people aren't bad people. Right. And so I think a lot of it comes back to, and not to victim blame, because I do this to myself, but it's like, a lot of times it comes back to, we end up finding ourselves frustrated over things that we either haven't set clear boundaries, we haven't communicated those boundaries, and so we are allowing this to happen. And so we have to actually take some sort of responsibility around that burnout to either set clear boundaries that actually are going to protect our peace, or if we have those, communicate those boundaries to the people who have the ability to enforce them. And to the extent that someone continues to erode that, then it's time for you to move on. And I know it sounds way easier said than done. I am a human too. I also feel burnout. But that is the formula that I come back to every single time. You give a lot of yourself to be a fit pro. You deserve to be able to set the boundaries that protect your peace. So do that. Communicate that. And if someone is willing to walk all over that consistently, then you should be willing to walk away.
I love that. Thank you for that refreshing honesty. It's hard for us to face it head on like that. So tell me a little bit about professional development. I know that this is an important topic for you personally, but also something that you really work hard to establish at Solid Core for all of your employees. Can you tell me, and the fit pros listening, what are some ways when you're working at a smaller scale in the fitness industry that you can find some professional development? Yes, things are free on YouTube. Yes, you can just Google things, but maybe what are some things that come to mind that are easy, maybe just in terms of accessibility, cost-wise, are also accessible that fit pros can do today, right now, after listening to this, to level up their game and their professional development?
So you've listed a couple of things, so I won't echo those, but those are absolutely great ideas, right? Listening to podcasts, YouTube, et cetera. Those are great. Where I often go, especially in the FitPro community, because we generally can trade with other modalities. So like if I coach at Solid Core, we might have a trade at XYZ Studio where I can drop into that class for free. One of the best things to do from a professional development perspective, in my opinion, as a fit pro, is actually go and observe other fit pros. Every single one of us has some level of magic in what we do. And if I can observe Maria teaching a class or leading a workout and go, wow, Maria is so incredible at accountability and how she gets someone to do another few reps, or how she gets someone, if she's teaching spin, to add another turn of resistance on the wheel. Like, how can I actually think about what she's actually doing, how she's connecting with that person, how she's motivating them, how she's getting in their head, and can I take that into my practice? You may go to someone and say, like, damn, that person has a fire playlist, and they are able to use music to motivate people in a way that is just top notch. What can I take away about how they build the arc of the music in their class, how they balance, you know, hit songs that people are immediately going to recognize with introducing people to new music that like actually might get them jazzed. And so like everyone has their magic, and you being able to step back and of course enjoy the class and get the workout out of it, but actually be a student in the moment and say, if I could take away one thing from this 30 minutes, this 45 minutes, this hour long experience that I've had, what would I do differently tomorrow? And so I actually really enjoy going to other Solid Core coaches classes, going to Soul Cycle classes, going to Barry's classes, trying a new workout in a city that I'm traveling to or a new country that I'm traveling to. Why? Not because it's just fun and a great way to mix it up. Yeah, it is that, but also because I can be a student and actually observe how someone else gets done whatever it is that they're really, really good at. And I try to take those learnings with me into the next time that I'm teaching a Solid Core class.
Beautifully said. I love that. What's something that you as a coach are still working on these days?
Okay. Honesty moment here. I'm really bad at names. And names, you know, it's the thing that everyone says, right? The number one thing that people love to hear in their native language is their own name. And it can be such a powerful connector. And my short-term memory, I don't know what it is, but it's not always great. And so I really work extra hard to try to say people's names, to remember people's names, to connect, names to specific actions that I'm observing in class. And it's something that we teach and train at Solid Core. But again, it's not one of my strengths. And so I'm constantly working on it because I know that that makes the workout experience for someone feel more personal. They're held more accountable. They feel a deeper sense of connection to the community. All of those things are really, really important for people and really, really important to the Solid Core brand. And so I know it's incumbent upon me as a coach to continue to hone my craft and hone my practice in names.
I can't believe that's something we have in common. But I'm always very upfront about it. And I'll say, like, if I forget your name, it's not because I'm a total bitch. I really can't remember, but I'll constantly say it, or I'll make sure when I speak to them that I use their name to try to remind myself until I see them in class a few times. And I'll always say, I'm so sorry. I forgot your name. Can you just remind me your name again? Waiting for someone else to say it never worked out for me. So
totally. And for me, when I'm coaching, I didn't have the confidence to do this when I first started coaching. You know, I would get people's names when I was like, you know, when people were checking in, I would write them down, but I would leave them in a singular spot. I am now at a place where I am confident enough in my inability to remember names that I actually carry them in my pocket. And so it will, you know, surprise no one who's taken a number of classes with me to look up and see me glancing down at my sheet of paper. And you know, again, imposter syndrome. I felt like as a coach, I had to be good at everything. And so like, no, you're going to look like you're a bad coach if you're glancing down at a sheet of paper to remind yourself of someone's name. And then I said, but that's actually coming from a place of ego about what I look like in the experience. And actually, the most important person in the experience is not me, it's the person. And so wouldn't it be better if I, quote, looked like a bad coach, but the person had an amazing experience where they heard their name and they felt that accountability and that connection to the community and all those things I just talked about? Yeah, that's the better outcome. So get out of the way, ego. Walk around with a piece of paper if that's what it takes to make sure that the person has an amazing experience.
I love that. It's true. It's not about us. It's about them. Okay. I have a couple more things that I want to ask about before Zoom cuts us off again. I can't. So Solid Core, I know that there was a new acquisition or something happened in 2023 that was pretty historic and that you were the initiator of, not out of dire circumstances, which again speaks to the viability of Solid Core, the opportunity that this brand still has. My question for you is, you've traditionally marketed to mostly women. What kinds of things is Solid Core doing to bring in different demographics beyond just saying the word diversity? But men are not traditionally known to be fanatics of Pilates. And it's something that I think is a miss. A lot of the males that I know who try Pilates are surprised by it. And dare I say, sometimes end up enjoying it. What are some things that you are doing as CEO and leader of your team and through your coaches and the Solid Core platform to bring more people that traditionally have not identified with Pilates before?
Yep. So you're spot on, Maria. Our population from a client perspective historically has been young white women. And so you can think about all of those sort of elements of identity. And obviously that's an oversimplification. But if you think about all of those elements of identity, we are actually attacking each of them currently. And so if you think about age, right? So one of the amazing things about Pilates and a Pilates adjacent workouts is that they actually are safe enough that you can do them at all stages of life. And so we started to locate in college towns to capture younger demographics. And then we've also started to market, especially in our marketing materials, in the videos that we produce on our website, the stories that we tell about clients on our social, to older folks as well, right? I think one of the coolest things about being a part of this community has been that my mother-in-law, who's in her 60s, has actually become a dedicated and loyal Solid Core client. And that to me is like so special. And this, to see the strength that she's gained, the confidence that she's gained as a result of doing this workout has been so, so cool. And so we've been really thinking about age on both ends of the spectrum. White. So again, boutique fitness generally, Pilates especially, has traditionally been a very white space. One of the biggest things across identity and diversity has always been about visibility. And so me just being me as the leader of this organization is important because I'm not white, for those of you who aren't seeing me. And it also has meant that I have had to do the work to not just be the leader of this organization, but to be a visible leader of this organization. And so sometimes people are like, oh my God, Brian, you're doing another podcast, or you're doing another article, you're doing another this, you're doing another that, you're doing another panel. That is about making sure that people see that the leader of this organization is someone of color and therefore thinks, oh, maybe this workout actually is for me. Maybe this community will be accepting of me, because when people don't see themselves in spaces, they oftentimes won't enter. And so that's been important at the top, but then we've also ensured that we've done the work to try to reach out to diverse communities at the coach level as well, and at every level in between. And then, as you mentioned, we're really thinking about the male audience, and specifically a lot of men find us because they are former athletes who may have been athletes in high school or college, who love the intensity of the athletics that they participated in, but are aging, maybe are recovering from injury, but recognize that they can't treat their body the same way that they used to when they were in their teens and 20s. And so they are finding Solid Core as that new outlet that allows them to still get the high from that intensity while also being accommodating to the needs of their evolving bodies. And we've really been leaning into that. And so again, in our marketing and our advertising and our recruiting, et cetera, we've tried to make sure that there's been that level of visibility. Again, making sure that people feel welcome when they walk into our spaces.
Beautifully said. I love that. One thing I really want to also just talk about briefly, or just give you the opportunity to talk about, is this idea that we're always looking for new members, more scalability, more studios. Not a lot of people talk about retention and what it really takes to continue to keep people tied to the community that you've already built, and making sure that studios, yes, run better, but that class experiences continue to give people more of a reason to continue to stay as part of the community. What is something that you do that you think you can share with everyone in terms of actionable points of how you really work on retention for the people who already know that Solid Core is a great workout, that already go 2 to 3 times a week? How does a brand continue to evolve and build that trust that you already have with your clients?
The number one way that I think about retention, that, by the way, we are not perfect at this by any stretch, it is a complete work in progress, but the number one thing that I think about retention is people will stay committed to a thing, positive or negative in their life, that is meeting a need that they have. Because people want to feel like their needs are being met. And again, this can be a positive or a negative in their life. Thankfully, in the business that we are in as Fit Pros, fitness and health and strength is a positive. However, the important thing in what I said is that we have to understand what the need is and then communicate how what we do helps meet that need. And that need today for someone may be different than that need 3 months from now. It may be different from that need 12 months from now or 24 months from now. And so it's incumbent upon us as Fit Pros, business leaders, marketers, et cetera, to continue to ask our clients, what are they looking for in our experience? And help them see how what our product does or is meets that need. And so long as you are staying on top of understanding that need and then communicating how your product or service helps meet that need, that is the single best way to ensure retention. Because people at the end of the day want their fundamental needs met. And so for me, the way that I lead this organization is trying to make sure that our teams that are in studio, when I'm coaching in studio, are having that conversation with their clients. What are your goals for the year? Why did you decide to try Solid Core? What made you come back if you haven't been here in a while? Again, all of those types of questions are really at the heart of them, trying to understand what that client's needs are. And then we are able to then respond by communicating why Solid Core can help them on that journey.
You're so good at the Fit Pro talk, the executive talk, the client talk, the business talk. I truly am not being facetious or trying to like suck up to you in any way, but I've heard so many interviews that you've done and listened to you talk on so many podcasts. And I learn so much every time I hear you talk. You have this ability to break things down and make them seem simple, because as you said, they're not rocket science. They probably are simple. It's light work, as the kids say. I can't thank you enough for sharing all your insight today and your grace. For anyone listening, we had to restart this interview 3 times. Zoom is doing me dirty. And the biggest thing that's killing me is not like embarrassment. It's that I missed like 15 questions I could have asked you, and I could talk to you forever, but I want to be mindful of your time, and it's time to go into rapid fire. Are you ready, Brian?
I am extremely nervous, but I'm as ready as I'm going to be. So let's go.
Let's go. And it doesn't have to be one answer, one word answer. I don't care if Zoom cuts us off. Okay. You talk as long as you want to. Brian, what is your favorite song or artist to teach to move to, or both?
Beyonce, hands down. No question.
Be all day, every day. Let's go. If you could only use one word to describe your teaching style, what would it be, Brian?
Chaotic. I'm just being real.
That's two things that we have in common right there. That word's been thrown around many an eval for me. The best smell in the world is
fresh baked bread. I'm a sucker for some carbs. I love carbs and like the smell of fresh baked bread. Oh, and I would only potentially change my answer if I smelled fresh popcorn. Those two smells.
Woo. That's the third thing we have in common. I make fresh popcorn with like the little whirly pop. I don't know if you've ever done that with my daughter, and it's like become our thing. And now she loves it as much as I do. And it makes the house smell so delicious.
I mean, who does not love fresh made palomitas, as we say in Spanish?
There he is, dropping more knowledge. What, Brian, what is the most important personal and business lesson you've learned thus far?
I actually think they're one and the same. And it's, again, it's going to sound so simple, but an overexpressed strength will be your weakness. And I am highly analytical. I'm highly data driven. And it also means I'm really bad at times of being in tuned to the emotional impact of the actions that I take. And so in both my personal life and in my professional life, that phrase of like an overexpressed strength becomes your weakness or can lead to your downfall guides me because I know my weak points and I try to surround myself by people who think differently than me and complement my strengths so that together we are stronger than we are apart.
I find that so hard to believe. Your EQ is off the charts.
But let me give you a tactical example. Pandemic. A lot of people's responses to the pandemic was not driven by logic, was all driven by emotion, right? Like how many people were wiping down their groceries even after we found out that, you know, my response as a leader oftentimes during the pandemic was, this is the fact. This is what the data says. This is what we're doing. This is the fact. This is what the data says. This is what we're doing. Very logical. People's responses to that, I found very confusing because they were like, I feel like you're making us unsafe at times. And I was like, no, but this is the fact. But it didn't matter. It was about how people felt. And as a leader, that became a blind spot for me. And I had to really rely on my team to help illuminate those blind spots because I'm like, no, I'm following the facts and the data and the science and what the experts are saying. I'm doing, quote, my job. No. Your job is actually to, of course, lead through that lens, but then also take into account the emotion and the perspective and all of that stuff, and then make a decision from there. And I wasn't always good at that. Again, a time during my leadership journey here that I fell on my face. So anyway, a strength so, overexpressed can be a weakness.
So refreshingly honest. I love that. If you could do any other job or career besides the one you have or have had, what would it be?
Something in aviation. I love travel. That could be working as a flight attendant. It could also be working in an airport lounge. I just love being around travel, love being around people who are traveling. There's so much energy that I get when I'm in an airport. Yeah, something in aviation.
That's so cool. There's so much energy that I get when I'm at an airport. I've never heard anyone say that. Now, every time I travel, I'm going to be like, give me some airport energy.
I truly do love it. I love showing up at the airport. I love the smell of jet fuel. Like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is magical.
This is why I love rapid fire. You never know what people are going to say. This is amazing. Brian, what's your favorite way to recover after an intense workout?
At home, on the couch, drinking an iced tea like I'm drinking right now, just like vegging. I'm not into cold plunges. I'm not into saunas. I'm just like, just let me sit down and cool off.
I love that. It's perfect. What's your favorite movie or musical?
My favorite musical is an old musical, but it's Anything Goes.
I love that one.
Yeah, I love Anything Goes, also travel related. I really do love the arts, and we go see shows all the time, but Anything Goes by far my favorite musical.
What about movie?
I actually don't watch movies. So I'm glad you gave me an out with musical. So I shouldn't say I don't watch movies. There are very, very few movies that I watch. And my favorite movie is probably a little bit embarrassing, but again, it's going to connect to the theme. My favorite movie is Air Force One. Harrison Ford, get off my plane. Like,
so good. So good. That and The Fugitive are two of my favorite Harrison Ford movies. So underrated. Wow.
I agree. Brian,
I feel like we should be friends.
That's
very forward, but I love your vibe so much. Okay, Brian, you've inspired so many people along your illustrious journey, personally and career-wise, but who inspires you?
It's going to be a really cheesy answer, but hopefully I get some kudos at home for this, but I'm going to say my husband. My husband is an elementary school principal. He is everything that I am not. And he's so patient. He's so kind. He like thinks about people's emotions, like all of the things that I'm not truly. And he's incredibly hardworking and driven and passionate. And every time that I want to be lazy, I look at him and I go, wow, imagine if you could accomplish half as much as he did. And it keeps me going.
Oh, I love that. That is so sweet. What
really,
a great answer.
Really cheesy. I almost didn't even want him to hear it. But he's really, really inspirational and just like thoughtful, continuous learner, like just like really, really, really inspirational.
I love that. That's so sweet. How can our listeners connect with you, Brian?
They can find me on Instagram. I'm at BeMySoFly. That's B. MYSOFLY. You can also find me the old-fashioned and boring way on LinkedIn, but I'm much more fun on Instagram.
You really are a lot of fun. One of my favorite things about your account is how you're not afraid to just be yourself, and your reels and your social content seem so authentic. Sometimes you can tell when people have people. And one of my favorite ones that you do is when you get kidnapped and why they would give you back. I hadn't watched that in a long time, but I rewatched it before this interview and I forgot how fucking funny that is. So if you're out there, like, give them a follow, take a solid core class. Hopefully there's one near you, but if you're ever traveling and you have an opportunity to take one, solid core classes are amazing. The coaches are amazing. The workout is amazing. You will love it. And thank you, Brian, once again, for being so gracious, for saying yes, for not telling me to go F myself when Zoom did me dirty here. I'm such a big fan. And I think our conversation is really going to help a lot of fitness professionals today.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Maria. It's been a pleasure.